know.
I'm not assuming anything, I'm just, you know, trying to hear something sooner.
So, okay, anybody have any more questions?
I just got one small question about publicizing people's rights.
Right.
Full use of available media, I mean, what kind of use do you envision for press releases, asking the media to have a column, or, I mean...
Yeah, I can think of a number of different media in the community, including probably the Daily, including the Ann Arbor Sun, and I'm sure the Ann Arbor News could even be convinced to give up some space for that purpose. There are a lot of groups in the community who have expertise in the field of media, who also have a strong commitment to basic human rights and to securing people's rights, who would be happy to cooperate in this respect. There are a number of radio stations, disc jockeys, graphics companies, print shops, leaflet distributors, all kinds of people who are interested in this question who could easily be mobilized if the city would just generate a little effort in that direction.
Would you be in favor of having council pass an ordinance, pass some sort of legislation that would make a call over 15 minutes on a television show mandatory for the media, or just something voluntary?
Just voluntary. I don't know, I don't think that that is, no, I wouldn't be in favor of anything like that, of course.
Well, yeah. See, the Ann Arbor News is...
I don't think the government has any right to do that. I don't think that there would be a problem, really. I think it's a question of initiative on the part of the city council. Just for instance, the question of the city human rights department. The city human rights department needs to be restructured so that it has some powers, but as it is right now, people are not aware of what the city human rights department can do for them in any given, you know, if a gay person, for instance, is trying to get an apartment and it believes that he's being discriminated against because of his sexual preference, he may or she may not know that some heat can be put on that landlord. I mean, that landlord can, under existing laws, may not, that person may not be able to cause the landlord to be thrown in jail for what they're doing. But some heat can be put on by the Human Rights Department as it exists now. People just don't know how to utilize it because the city has taken no initiative in publicizing it. Similarly, if the city were just to take initiative in an ongoing, trying to establish an ongoing program by a cooperative method, not trying to coerce any news media, I think an awful lot could be done without very much expenditure at all. And it would serve to educate people about how to protect themselves as much as possible within the existing system.
Yes.
There's just one more quick question, not really to the campaign, but you and the Rainbow people have often put out circulars with the quote to rehumanize the Human Rights Party. What do you see as the problems with the Human Rights Party now, and that they need to be rehumanized?
Well, we think that, in the first place, the rehumanization process that we spoke to has begun and is ongoing right now. I think that that was a call that we put out, for instance, prior to the Human Rights Party's January 11 convention at which the steering committee was elected, et cetera. There were probably 350 people at that meeting. It was a mass open meeting, a very vigorous meeting. There were well over 125 to 150 people at the next mass meeting, which was a routine mass meeting. As you saw in the past, conventions of 40 people, normal mass meetings of 22, 25, 30. We think that, in general, the mass meetings of the Human Rights Party have been small because they've been badly publicized and because they've been operated in a strictly parliamentarian manner, which tends to make it difficult for people who don't have a firm understanding of Robert's Rules of Order to express themselves thoroughly in a meeting. part of the reason for my campaigns calling for ward meetings. This is a Human Rights Party, part of the Human Rights Party platform. Part of the reason for that is to open up beyond the mass meetings and not wait for the community to come to the Student Activities Building and to understand and study Robert's Rules of Order, but to go to the community and manifest with the actions of the Human Rights Party elected officials and other members of the party that we do want to open ourselves up, we do want to engage in dialogue with all kinds of people, we do want to represent as many people in the community as we can, and this is better served by getting away from the strictly parliamentarian kind of meeting that have gone down in the past. There is a purpose for parliamentary meetings from time to time, but for all of them to be of that nature unduly restricts the Human Rights Party's participation, mass participation. So our members of the Rainbow People's Party, who are also members of the steering committee of the Human Rights Party, Lenny Sinclair and Linda Ross, both are members of the steering committee, have introduced proposals to make the mass meetings of the Human Rights Party more amenable to free and open discussion by having an hour's worth of free talk without any motions being presented, etc., on really important issues. We'll continue to try to make the mass meetings more well-known, we'll continue to try to publicize them more, get more people to participate in them, and get them to be easier to participate by people, regular people, who haven't studied Robert's Rules of Order. And by that, I mean, I myself led meetings when I was in high school by Robert's Rules of Order and knew the basics of it, and I had trouble understanding how to express myself best in Human Rights Party parliamentary meetings.
I think there's another aspect to that too, which is, as a result of that, what will happen is that the Human Rights Party will address itself a whole lot more to everyday issues that people need to relate to, rather than being a debate society, or rather than just putting forth symbolic things. That if more people will get involved in it, that it will, for example, run somebody for sheriff, would have run somebody for sheriff in the fall, would address itself more to concrete needs.
It's been said that it's almost imperative and necessary that the HRP win the second ward to remain as a viable political force in Ann Arbor. Do you see this race as being that critical?
I see it as being a very critical race. I don't think that the Human Rights Party is going to fall apart if it doesn't win the second ward, but on the other hand, I think that we need to have a victory in this ward or in some way in this race in order to build again the kind of enthusiasm that existed last spring in order to really get down to business on city council.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ships are once again entering North Vietnam's Haiphong harbor.
Here we go.
This is Jan Austin for the Asian News Service. Foreign ships are once again entering North Vietnam's Haiphong harbor. Four ships entered the harbor last Monday, according to a report today from Agence France-Presse. The French report from Hanoi said that the ships entered after North Vietnamese engineers and port pilots had reopened the entry channels. Vietnam News Agency reported in Hanoi that five other freighters had also been unloaded during the 10-day period. AFP said that this tends to confirm reports in Hanoi that North Vietnamese frogmen began clearing the mines immediately after the last U.S. bombing raid on December 30th. Last October, AFP also reported mine clearing operations by the North Vietnamese, but the U.S. dropped new mines in the harbor in December. Although U.S. Admiral Brian McCauley, the man in charge of the U.S. mine clearing operation, arrived in Hanoi on February 5th, It is not known whether U.S. mine clearing efforts provided for in the peace agreement have gotten underway. The U.S. has also not announced how long its demining operations would take. However, AFP correspondent Jean Thorval reported last Wednesday that according to reliable sources in Hanoi, about 60% of the Standard mines had been cleared by North Vietnamese frogmen some time ago. Vietnam News Agency also reported today that traffic had been restored on a major bridge in Quang Binh province, located in North Vietnam's heavily bombed panhandle area. Reconstruction of the bridge, which had been hit hundreds of times, began as soon as the bombing was halted, VNA reported, and was completed within 10 days. This is Jan Austin for the Asian News Service.
This is Banning Garrett for Asia News Service. Agence France-Presse reported from Paris today that Mrs. Nguyen Thi Binh, foreign minister of the Provisional Revolutionary Government of South Vietnam, charged that the Saigon government has ordered its troops throughout South Vietnam to attack the zones controlled by the PRG in order to gain more territory. Mrs. Binh said that it was the Saigon government, not the PRG, that has been responsible for the reported ceasefire violations. Mrs. Binh's charge came the day after CBS News reported that a PRG village, visited earlier this week by one of its correspondents, had been bombed and occupied by the Saigon government. The PRG foreign minister also charged that the Saigon government had violated the peace agreement by freeing political prisoners outside the agreed-upon channels. This, she said, meant that they risked being physically liquidated by the Chu regime. And in South Vietnam, the PRG's Liberation Press Agency reports that thousands of peasants are breaking out of strategic hamlets and returning to their native villages. In a delayed report issued today, Liberation Press Agency said that in the days following the signing of the peace agreement, more than 500 families in Kinh Tuong province, west of Saigon, with the help of sympathetic Saigon soldiers, broke out of their strategic hamlets and left for home. Liberation Press Agency has released several similar reports in the past few days, indicating that a large-scale movement of the peasantry back to the countryside and often to PRG-controlled areas may be beginning with a ceasefire. The strategic hamlets are barbed wire-enclosed compounds which were constructed by the U.S. and Saigon governments over the past decade as part of the pacification program. Hundreds of thousands of South Vietnamese peasants have been forced to leave their native villages and live in these hamlets under military control. This is Banning Garrett for Asia News Service.
Hi, that's it.
Okay, now I got the tape rolling.
Okay.
So you tell me when you're going to go ahead, and then I'm going to take the mouthpiece off so it won't interfere with the sound.
Okay, I'll go ahead. Obviously, I'll do the primary, the basic one first, then I'll do David.
Right. Now both of these should be, you know, 40 seconds or something like that, 50 seconds.
Okay, I don't have a second hand.
Yeah, but I think you'll just have short wraps. It'll be all right.
Yeah. Okay. You ready? This is Commander Cody speaking to you out of the Ozone. Now, I don't live in Ann Arbor anymore, but if I did, on February 19th, which is a Monday, there's a real important election, mayor and city council, and if you have registered to vote, it'd be real foolish if you didn't do it, man. So, you know, get out there and do it. Let me try another one on the same line, okay?
Yeah, you could talk about what the council can do, you know.
Right, and let me see. That's a good lead-in. Okay, you ready?
Go ahead.
Okay, this is Commander Cody. I'm talking to you out of the Ozone. I don't live in Ann Arbor anymore, but if I did, on February the 19th, Monday, I'd be down voting. The primary election for mayor and the city council, and they can do a lot of stuff for the community of Ann Arbor. For instance, you know very well about the $5 marijuana law. Now, if you have registered to vote, I strongly urge you to go down there and do that exact thing. It'd be real foolish if you'd miss it. Well, one more of those.
Okay, did you get the date in there?
I
didn't.
Yep.
All right, okay.
All right, this is, hold time out. Oh. This is Commander Cody. I'm talking out of the Ozone right now. I don't live in Ann Arbor anymore. But if I did, on February 19th, on Monday, there was a primary election for the mayor and the city council. And if I was registered to vote, I would be down there doing it. But this is one of those times we can do something for the Community Action Program in Ann Arbor. You know, about the $5 marijuana law. There's more things like that that can be done. So if you have registered to vote on Monday, February 19th, get your ass down there and do it.
All right, that was good. Far out. All right. You want to do the next one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, This is Commander Cody, and I would like to, at this time, talk a little bit about David Sinclair, who is running for 2nd Ward City Council on the Human Rights Party primary. That's February 19th. That's a Monday. That's voting day. As mayor and city council up for grabs, and I'd like to see our man right there. Now, I don't live in Ann Arbor anymore, but I've known David for a long time, and I know his involvement with the city community programs, park programs, and I know what he could do if he got into office. So if you have registered to vote, I want you to run down there and vote for David right now.
Okay, you want to do another one of those?
Yep.
Remember, that's going to be played like a few days before, so it wouldn't be just right now. It'd be on Monday.
Right.
You can
just write it.
Right.
Here we go.
Make sure you say HRP 2nd Ward City Council.
Right.
All right.
This is Commander Cody. I'm talking to you from the Ozone. Let's do it again. Okay, this is Commander Cody. I'm talking to you out of the Ozone, folks. I'm not living in Ann Arbor anymore. And on February 19th, Monday, there's a big election, primary election for mayor, city council. Now, I'm endorsing David Sinclair, as if you didn't know, for the 2nd Ward City Council. And that's the Human Rights Party primary. If you've registered to vote, get down to the polls, and I recommend you vote for David. You all know what he's done for the city of Ann Arbor the last few years. We all know what he can do. He's got a lot of potential, and I really think you should vote for him.
All right.
Okay, let's try one more.
Okay. Yeah, that one was good, but I think you should have closed it up a little more.
Right.
Okay.
This is Commander Cody speaking to you on behalf of David Sinclair for the Human Rights Party primary. That's February 19th, which is a Monday. David's running for the 2nd Ward of the Ann Arbor City Council. If you've registered to vote, you should be down there, and you should be voting for him. David Sinclair, he's done a lot for the city of Ann Arbor, will do a lot for the city of Ann Arbor. He's a people's man, and I think he'd be a good man for this job.
Okay, all right, I think we got it, man.
Okay. Now
testing 1, 2.
Sinclair, and I'm running in the HRP primary on Monday, February 19. I am a candidate for 2nd Ward City Council, which is the one with the greatest chance of putting an HRP member on council in this spring's election. I hope to unseat the Democrats and work to implement concrete programs that will serve the needs of the people of the 2nd Ward and the Ann Arbor community at large. I'm also running to help lead the Human Rights Party in a new direction, away from the abstractions that have dominated it in the past and toward more concrete methods of dealing with people's problems. As for my qualifications, I'm 27 years old, a graduate of Dartmouth College, and a member of the Rainbow People's Party. I've been a full-time community organizer in Ann Arbor for more than 4 years, including working on the Ann Arbor Blues and Jazz Festival, the Free John Sinclair Movement, Ann Arbor Voter Registration Drive, local anti-war rallies, legal defense funds, and the Free Summer Concerts of the Community Parks Program, as well as serving on the City Cable Casting Commission. And I think this experience in working with the people will help me do a good job on council. Based on what people have said to me and on my own 4.5 years' experience in struggling for day-to-day survival, some of the most basic issues are the need for good, low-cost food and housing, medical care that will help us, not send us to the poorhouse, city-subsidized child care, public transportation, and the need for justice for the people against the increasing police power of the government. These are all things that the City Council can work to provide to this community if they make their priority serving people instead of the businessmen, developers, university administrators, etc., who dominate council's activities at the present time.
My name is Richard L. Steinhardt, and I'm a candidate for mayor on the Human Rights Party primary. People all over the country say that Ann Arbor is a unique city, but is it governed in a unique way? We deserve a new approach to city government. Causes, not symptoms, will have to be dealt with sooner or later. By acting now, we will have the potential for improvement and will save the higher future cost of dealing with more and more symptoms. Our city is growing rapidly. We must adjust our behavior. Should we decide to set limits on our growth? Let us not become like a senile geriatric who becomes too old and large for his mind to support life. We are still pioneers. Man has not yet conquered the elements. His technology is burying him in a polluted, data-processed condominium. Look around you. People have become absorbed by militant apathy. We stubbornly fight to be left passively ignorant. On Monday, February 19th, the decision will be made as to who represents the Human Rights Party in changing the priorities of our city. I ask for your support and endorsement.
These endorsements of candidates in tomorrow's primary election are those of the Ann Arbor Tribal Council only and do not represent the views of WNRZ-FM. In the past few weeks, after playing these endorsements, we've offered time to responsible individuals or groups to respond on the air. What follows now is one such response from candidate for mayor in the HRP primary, Richard Steinhardt. Discussions in that meeting, you know, they came up, we came down. I think, you know, the truth lies somewhere in between for material, somewhere in between 3,700 and 7,300. I think there are some people from Tribal Council here tonight. In fact, they're passing out a proposal, and you might like to, you know, hear from them about where they stand right now.
Would somebody like to speak for Tribal Council on this question? Other than distributing this, can I get council unanimous consent that Ms. Pomeman speak to us? Go ahead.
Thank you. We did make an estimate that was lower than what we finally did come out with after meeting with the city, with Jim Hudak and the different people from the building code enforcers. And since looking at the final glass building and looking at that, it would be best to put $3,000 or $4,000 into the Washington Street buildings for a period of 9 months, or whether it would be better
to put that amount of money or less or however much it would take to make the final glass building and the zones usable for tribal council. So what we're hoping is that that city council will defer the question again tonight until we can try to make an estimate and find out which would be best for us to do, you know, compared to the lengths of time that we would be able to have the buildings and the amount of money that we would have to put into it.
Further discussion. Boy, we got an awful lot of boom here. Can we? Councilman DeGreek?
Yeah, I'd like to move to defer for 2 weeks until that can be accomplished.
Motion to defer for 2 weeks. Is there support?
Support.
Supportive discussion on the motion to defer.
Yeah. It's going to take 2 weeks for you to make that decision. That's right.
We have no meeting next week, though, so it's going to be 2 weeks.
Mr. Kirk, do you want to call the roll? Motion to defer.
Councilman Thomas?
Yes.
Councilman DeGreek?
Yes.
Councilman Faber?
Yes.
Councilwoman Exter?
Yes.
Councilman Meade?
Yes.
Councilman Coburn?
Yes.
Councilman Handler?
No.
Councilman Benner?
No.
Councilman McCormick?
No.
Councilman Fairbanks?
Yes.
Mayor Harris?
No.
7 yes and 4 no.
Motion to defer is carried.
Do you want to correct it to 8 and 3?
What? I voted no.
Did you want to vote no? I'm sorry, huh? Excuse me. Feel bad. Three reacted on previously four resolution for a public hearing on reconstituting Ann Arbor Transportation Authority. So move.
First, a lot of black activists in Ann Arbor that we have had contact with in the past, that the Human Rights Party has had contact with in the past. In the month of December, spent a lot of days working on getting more black people to relate to the Human Rights Party, and found that the Human Rights Party was viewed as a debate society, primarily. And most of these persons felt no real way to relate to the Human Rights Party in any concrete manner at this time. When we say that what Frank said we said, what we mean is that there are large numbers of people in this area who don't conceive of themselves as Democrats or Republicans, and that the Human Rights Party does not have to look to the liberal wing of the Democratic Party for its constituency, but has to look to young people who have never been Democrats and Republicans, and that by building a strong base of support and a strong organization that comprises the energies of lots of people, and that gets out of the parliamentary meetings and the debates and starts dealing more actively every day with the problems people have in Ann Arbor, then minorities, workers, other groups of people will be able to relate more positively to what the Human Rights Party means and what it's about. That's how I feel.
Can I ask a little bit? Like you say that basically HRP should work with people who have no party line. Okay. But what about, I'm thinking of Bullard beating Burkhardt. Yeah. And that nightmare, I don't understand it. But really, if you say that you don't have to reach for people with party lines, I mean, HRP got clobbered sort of on McGovern's coattails in a way. So what do you do about that? Kids who are like feeling themselves within the Democratic Party. You say that, like I voted Democratic, okay, I didn't vote for Bullard. But like I don't find myself within the Democratic Party, but I, you know, like if there's any election where HRP is not there, I vote Democratic. So I don't quite understand. You're saying people who just have no alignment? I think
what
you
I'm
have to worry about the liberal left.
What I'm saying is I voted for George McGovern and I voted for Steve Burkhardt.
Yeah.
I think that the things that compelled me to do that are accessible to any voter. I mean, it's not just... See, the idea that
someone's going to go in because they're going to vote for George McGovern, that they're not going to vote for Steve Burkhart is an insult to the voters' intelligence to me. And I think everybody knows you don't go in there and vote for Ben Spock if you want your, you know, you could have gone in there. We might as well have stayed home as it was anyway, but but you, right. You know, that's the reasoning that I have anyway, is you don't go in there and vote for Ben Spock, although he's farther out than George, you know. You go in there and vote for George because Tricky Dick is awful. And similarly, I supported Steve Burkhart and voted for Steve Burkhart. I don't think there's a lot. You don't consider yourself a party line Democrat.
No, I don't.
You go in there.
Maybe I disagree.
You're not afraid of splitting your ticket.
No, but I think a lot of kids here do. I don't know. Well, that's maybe you're right.
I don't think so, but you know, I could be wrong. I don't know.
I'd like to speak into the same question of the basic differences between us all. And I'll say that the difference between me and David, particularly, is David represents a collective that is working on a political organization. They are a political organization and trying to get candidates elected, although they are not an electoral party. As for myself, I represent myself as a bourgeois individual in the political process. I have no cadre or faction affiliations. You know, there's the basic difference right there, that I work in the system. I work for the university. You know, I'm involved with that ripoff on the, you know, time and energy level, and then I have to go around and turn around and try to get that money and put it into tuition so that I can liberate myself through the system by getting an education and being able to change something from that end when that end becomes available. And that is basically a bourgeois individual's trip. And a lot of the students on this campus are involved in the same thing. They're in school, they're trying to get themselves a degree so they can get into some professional capacity where they can affect some sort of change, you know, some sort of direction in their own lives. And that's the basic difference, you know, between myself and David. Now, between myself and Frank, I don't exactly know what the differences are because I don't know what he does for a living. I know he's a law student, and he's involved in that same end of you know, the system where he's trying to get into a professional position. And
well, it's that motives. I'm a law student doesn't mean I'm necessarily seeking a quote professional position. Some people do different things with the law than other people.
A profession. I don't mean a position where you're working for somebody, but you do consider it a profession. And, you know, there's some sort of worthwhile, productive work involved with it. But not right now, not while you're in school doing it, because, you know, that's changing the system from within, and that's something that I have a lot of fear about because of my involvement with Students for Democratic Society. Now, we were able to change a lot about the 18-year-old vote and stuff like that by getting on the streets and expressing our cynicism, you know, for the entire social structure. And it worked a great deal. We could change a lot of things. The Human Rights Party became possible because the alternative parties like the Peace and Freedom Party, which I supported. I worked for the candidacy of Eldridge Cleaver in 1968, a friend of Fred Halstead, who was the candidate in Michigan for vice president along with Eldridge Cleaver.
Fred Halstead?
Yeah. I never heard of him. Well,
no, I know who he is, but that's not who he was.
I mean, not. Well, I know he was running for something, and I was supporting him. But that's my trip. I'm basically the bourgeois individual here trying to hustle up a job.
You know, the council doesn't pay, I gotta tell you that.
Yeah, yeah, listen, man, when we get down there, you know, we just say, listen, man, we gotta put in a vote here.
At least two of you mentioned before, you were talking about spending priorities in council, since that's the big thing, is how council spends the money. And one of the things you brought out was spending money for the police business, which is $80,000, and you were saying all the things that money could have been used for, but unless you're going to have the policeman walking, and you can say that and start right here, but unless that, they're going to have some car, and it comes to a point where maintenance on cars that are 2 years old and run about 125,000 miles a year,
well,
maintenance is more expensive than new cars. And why are you saying that, you know, you're going to have to pay it out one way or the other? What is wrong with new cars?
Well, first of all, there weren't any with 125,000. There were some with 12 that they were replacing.
They run more.
All right, but I'm taking my line. Basically, I heard an excellent criticism from Mayor Harris, of all people, as to that whole thing, and then he voted for them. I don't know why, but Look, the police department is set up now so that not only the chief, but all the little Indians, right, they have their own individual car, right? The chief and the captains and some of the lieutenants and some of the chiefs of the divisions all have these cars, and they don't use them most of the time. If you had a motor pool in the city, which use of automobiles was based on need, you'd be reducing the need for those kinds of city-owned vehicles. But it's not just those damn vehicles. I remember on the CPHA picket line, right, when we were supporting some women that were on strike, there were like about 30 of us, okay? And there was nobody's been convicted on any of those picket lines of any act of violence, all right? The police were there sometimes in numbers twice the number of picketers, with vans, with videotape cameras, right, with plainclothesmen, with people working on overtime. Protecting the company in that strike with all the elaborate equipment probably cost this city at least $100,000. And that kind of stuff goes on every week, and David knows it from another angle.
What was this $80,000 to be used for?
For the purchase of new police vehicles, 25 new ones. And Mayor Harris himself said there's a waste going on in the police department, and yet he voted for it.
There's a waste in general in the city.
It's a wide subsidized waste.
They have cars coming out their ears down there. I agree with that. But the police cruisers, which are used more or less on a, you know, throughout 24-hour day, you know.
For what?
For patrolling, unless you.
Who do they patrol, and who do they stop, and who do they harass?
I agree, but
people
unless you're limiting
cars.
Them and putting them on bicycles or walking, you are going to have.
I think the police should walk. It would probably reduce crime that? In the high crime neighborhoods, right. Not on a dyad. You know, if the cops were in neighborhoods where people were getting their homes broken into and people were hustling out with their stereos. You know, there's no cops that can do anything about that from a car.
That leads you to another problem. Like, well, first of all, what the armed robberies here in Ann Arbor, the number of them are increasing rather fast. I mean, quite a few, right? All right, if you want the policemen to be able to respond to those, like they have them at, late at night or something, how are you going to do it? Are you going to have all your policemen on foot?
We're not talking about putting all the police.
I'm just
on
saying
it.
That
I think
you are questioning the spending priorities. Yet I'm not sure you're putting them in the right place.
I don't think that sum of money represents just a maintaining the present level of the fleet. I think it represents an expansion of the police fleet, and it's a question of whether money goes to. It's like to take the federal revenue sharing program, is probably a Nixon program to get money into police departments, basically, and to beef up police departments. Take it out of the anti-poverty programs and to put it into police departments. We feel that the money should go, all the revenue sharing money should go for, to aid poor people and people who are relatively powerless in the political system. This is $80,000 that's been ripped off from poor people and is now going to expand a police department, not just maintain it. That's why it's opposed.
I think in terms of if you're looking for things to cut down on this, the other city cars, like, they do replace them a lot more, quite often, and they're not used on a 24-hour basis or anything, and I think...
They're not used to oppress people.
Yeah, I mean, you can go down there any day and see a lot of them just sit in the parking lot all day long and maybe get driven around, you know, if they want to go shopping in lunch hour or something.
We're going down.
And it's just, the police cars are the ones that are used, and I'd say, you know, I think it's easy to knock the police, and you can get a lot of people saying, yeah, that's right, and I don't think
well,
really
if we let that trend continue where the federal government is allowed to rip off the anti-poverty program and put down money in the police department, we will end up with a paramilitary fascist dictatorship such as Detroit has. that ain't nothing for Ann Arbor.
I've got another question over here.
Yeah, I have a question very much related to DESPYs. And that is that in the fall, HRP made the campaign claim that when you're electing a party, I mean, when you're electing officials of HRP, you're not electing an individual, you're electing a party. And my question really has two parts. The first is, do you still keep this stand? And the second part is that if so, then what would be the actual difference on city council if any of you were elected? You know, what would it matter?
Well, each of us, being candidates, are able to express our own things. But once we were elected, then we would be responsible to party doctrine. But we would also have a control over what goes into that party doctrine. So, and it's a two-way kind of a thing. The candidates of the party, you know, have a certain amount of say in what goes on, being as they're a member of the party. But when they become candidates, then they're able to express, you know, their own contribution to the party. And once they become elected, then they have that power to express and to change the party policies as they relate to city council, as they relate to the city as a whole and the party in its relationship with the people.
More so than if, let's say, I'm sure most of you are very much involved in the party and that you are in high positions in, let's say, committees related to the problems.
I mean, I'm a bourgeois individual, baby.
Okay.
The HRP is an electoral party. I went down to file for city council. If HRP wasn't on there, I'd have filed in another party and still ran. But HRP happened to be, you know, the closest to, you know, my kind of activity. And therefore, I'm in that party, and now I'm responsible to follow party doctrine. But if I was elected, then I would be in a position to also form party policy more than I am now, I'm sure, because I would have a voting power on city council.
I think if I were elected, of the candidates running, that I'd open the party up the most, and that I would take the most active initiatory approach to getting more input from people in the community and what the Human Rights Party was doing and what it was, what actions it was taking on council, etc. I think also that I've never been a Democrat. I've never had, I don't feel that I'm rebelling against the Democratic Party in any way. I've never had much faith in the Democratic Party or in the Republican Party since I started thinking about things politically. I think that I would be able to put the interests of the community ahead of the interests of the Human Rights Party vis-a-vis the Democrats more so than the other candidates, except maybe Sandy. I don't think Sandy's got a big thing on that either.
Can I ask a specific question in that regard? To kind of like preface it, one of my gripes, my few gripes against HRP is that it's a group limited to students and to people from, like, well, I'm not sure, but people from white middle class backgrounds, things like that. It is a very narrow, like, party, and that probably one of the best ways to gain support as a party is to broaden into areas like minority groups, blacks, and so on. And yet you said that you feel the party needs to be a party of freaks and before the blacks can hook up to the party. Why do you,
I say that because, as I also said, I've made a lot of efforts. We have worked, and I have worked on a lot of concrete programs with black people, black activists in the past. Among the endorsements that I outlined to you are a lot of black people, a lot of black people who work in Ann Arbor and who at this point are not willing to try to help the Human Rights Party develop because they feel that it's too much of a closed-off, small kind of clique. I say that because that's what I view. I think those are the real conditions. I mean, I don't say that that's a goal of the Human Rights Party to shut black people out or anything like that, but people who are serious in the black community at the present time do not relate seriously to the Human Rights Party. That's what I mean. The Human Rights Party has got to build up strength and build up a base of support and get outside the debating society kind of image that it has with its own practice before minorities and other groups like that are going to relate to it. That's how I feel about it.
Okay. Was that to all three of us?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, one of the things that was a real drag about our campaign last fall, which I argued against, was that constant monotonous, you know, elect a robot, you know, thing. And, Susan Winning, for instance, was a highly qualified candidate, but by the fact that we emphasized that those things somehow didn't matter, which I disagree with, but people were made to think that, gee, why should we vote for her? This HRP sort of is implying that she really hasn't done very much. And, you know, and we allowed that to happen ourselves. I argued against it. I sure would have wished I would have had some support during the campaign from the Rainbow People's Party.
You did it.
Outside the party and not inside, Lenny. That's where it matters. That's how you got to change it. I mean, that's why you're back in, right? OK, Okay.
We're back in because now it's a primary in the
right. Well,
county convention or city convention.
One of the things about our party is that the candidates do not dictate every bit of policy as to how the campaign is going to be run, which I think is a good thing. I think David and Sandy and I would probably agree that probably the worst place, the worst perspective to have in a campaign is the candidate's position, boy, because we, you know, it's our own bodies on the line, and we tend to see things in very distorted ways when perhaps reality is a little bit different, okay? So I would say that emphasis has been misplaced. I mean, yes, we run on a platform, and yes, we're bound to a platform, but there is discussion that goes on around that platform. We get input from all sorts of people, and we should get input from more. I want to thoroughly agree with what David Sinclair had to say about our relationship to black people, and I found it through basically the same mechanism. There's been one action that the Human Rights Party has had that's had active participation of black people. That was opening up the Cable Television Commission, and that was something that both David and I worked on in organizing, and was a success. And part of the reason it was a success was, in fact, we did get input from black people and from poor people.
This guy here has had a question.
Don't ask me.
We get a lot about the caucuses, the HRP, the patricidal, the kind of, the melted almonds, the chocolate marshmallows, and whatever. I'd like to know from...
Rainbow fudge, you forgot.
Rainbow fudge. And I'd know from all three of you, will you, you know, unequivocally support the winner of the HRP primary when it comes down to the generals in April?
I will.
Huh.
Yes.
Yeah, without doubt. Who else can we support?
Louis Ernst? I don't think he's going to run.
I have a question to the top candidates, and which I feel is very important as far as choosing one, is how much time will be devoted to talking to people, holding mass meetings, finding out what the people in the second ward want, you know, because as far as I know, like Frank is a law student now, and you're working for the university, and who's going to be able to devote the most time to finding out what the people want?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very available. I only work on weekends and holidays. Devote all my effort to communicating with my constituents, should I be elected, and representing them in city council.
What salary does a councilman throw nowadays?
Zero.
Big zero?
Mm-hmm. They might change, but the Democrats are afraid to propose it. You know, we'll vote for it if it happens because it'll let, you know, poor people on council. But the Democrats don't want to do it because they're afraid the Republicans will attack it if they do it. And, you know, it's the typical Democratic thing.
HRP supports salaries for council people.
Pardon me?
We support the salary thing. That's what David said. Let's go down the line.
Did you have a question?
We hadn't answered completely in terms of time.
Ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's a main part of my campaign. I think I've spoken to it already.
The fact that I'm a law student, as David Sinclair knows, has not prevented me from being one of the most active members of the Human Rights Party in this city. I started this summer, and almost immediately I threw myself into that whole cable TV fight. And I'm working almost full-time in this campaign. And if I lose, I'm going to spend, maybe not full time, but I'm certainly going to spend a substantial amount of time working for Lisa North or David Sinclair or Sandy Stevenson. And there's an old saying about if you want something done, ask somebody that's busy. Right? Got it?
Hard question. I probably came later. And what psychology are you going to use to win?
What?
To win the primary.
What?
What psychology are you going to use to win, assuming you win the primary?
Psychology.
What are you going to do? Assuming most people aren't human rights people in Ann Arbor, what are you going to do to combat this? You have to broaden your base somehow, no matter how.
Well, I'm just going to campaign full speed ahead.
Yeah.
I use a little different tactics.
We just saw our opponent's literature for the first time tonight. And their tactic is, number one, to deny that they're a Democrat, right? They just have their name up there. Number two is to advocate all these programs that sound nice, except the Human Rights Party introduced them a year and a half ago, and the Democrats have been blocking them. So I think I'd be campaigning on the HRP record and show that, you know, that that's a sham. You know, where were they a year and a half ago, or where were they 4 years ago when they came to power? And I think people appreciate constructive alternative programs, you know, about the lives that we have to live here in Ann Arbor. And HRP has been the best of the three parties on that level. We've introduced more proposals and we've done more things than the other two parties combined several times over.
I'm not sure exactly what you mean by what would be the psychology of my campaign if I were to win the primary.
Well, I think, you know, most people are against the right party. People who would vote for it anyways, even if they split their vote.
Not in this ward.
In the first place, in this ward, in the last council election.
She got something like close to 50%.
The Human Rights Party had a handy majority, or a handy plurality, rather, over the Democrats, and the Republicans got hardly anything. So it's not like there's a big uphill battle just from the reading in the last reading of the last election, like there's an uphill battle for the Human Rights Party. I think the Democratic Party's record speaks for itself in that the Democratic candidate is actually the result of a thorough search on the part of the Democratic Party leadership for a candidate who could co-opt the Human Rights Party or would have the best chance of co-opting the Human Rights Party. It's a problem. I don't think that their candidate actually, or that the Democratic Party can actually stand on its record and say that its record reflects a concern with the planks of Carol Jones' platform. And I think that's probably what I would concentrate on in a campaign.
Myself, I'd try to relate to people's needs, human needs, and any modification in the party platform that would relate to people's everyday needs like transportation, housing, that is not already in the platform, I would like to add. I think that's the best psychology to work on would be to relate to people's needs.
No more questions? Let's split.
May I ask one thing? Just to go back to when you were talking about, and you keep saying how you stayed in the party last fall and worked, even though you had disagreements.
And criticized.
And criticized even though you had disagreements. And you actually worked, did you actually work on people's campaigns in the fall?
Yes, I raised the money.
You raised the money for those campaigns.
Yeah.
Well, see, to me, if I disagreed with the direction that people were going in. If a bunch of people got together and they said, and as I thought they were saying last fall, they said, well, let's all drive out and jump into the ocean and drown ourselves, you know. I wouldn't go out and help them tune up the car, you know.
It's a matter of party politics.
Well, let her finish.
You know, it's just I didn't participate because I disagreed with what they were doing and I thought it was dangerous and I thought they were going to run the into the ground because of what they were doing. I don't think that I don't think that you saying that you stayed in is necessarily a good thing.
Well, I guess it's a matter of, you know, how different people respond to that situation. My reaction is if these are people with whom I basically agree, and I think we both agree that we basically agree with the thrust of the Human Rights Party in terms of its platform, right? That we want to try and make it by our own efforts as good as we possibly can. And damn it, I tried to do that. And it would have been nicer if more people would have been trying to do what I was trying to do. It doesn't help to walk away and say, well, you guys are fucking up so long, goodbye, because, I mean, how are you going to get those people to change? Is it cool to let them just jump off into the ocean? Or do you try and get them to turn the car around?
That's what we do. And I think that it was our efforts that made a lot of people, including yourself, go through a process in the fall where you eventually decided that the chocolate almonds were leading the party in the wrong direction. And you came around to a point where you said you did substantially agree with what our criticisms had been.
Some of them. Well, anybody that has ever seen me react to the politics put out by Chalk and Almonds when they were international socialists before, and SDS or part of SDS before. And these people have been around for, you know, God knows how long, and ever since I came here, I've known a lot of them. I mean, I've opposed that kind of politics, that kind of dogmatic, theoretical approach for as long as I've been active, and I'll continue to. So it wasn't just, I mean, the Rainbow people performed a service by making the criticism. They didn't perform a service.